Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On October 1st, 2007, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the Washington State Grange v. Washington State Republican Party case. The court was asked to consider whether or not Washington's modified blanket primary system violates the First and Fourteenth Amendment right to freedom of association by denying political parties control over which candidates to endorse. In this episode of SCOTUSCast, Miller Baker, a partner in the D.C.-based law firm McDermott, Will, and Emery, offers his own analysis of the case. As always, the Federalist Society itself takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Attorney Baker.
On October the 1st, 2007, the Supreme Court heard argument in Washington State Grange v. Washington State Republican Party. In State of Washington v. Washington State Republican Party, a consolidated case from the Ninth Circuit involving Washington State's two-step general election system enacted by Ballot Initiative 872 in November 2004. Under that system, which was modeled on a similar system in Louisiana, all candidates, regardless of party affiliation or lack thereof, appear on the so-called primary ballot. Initiative 872 provides that candidates are to be identified on the ballot by any, quote, party preference or, quote, independent status expressed by candidates in their filing papers. Although political parties remain free to nominate or endorse candidates, a party's decision to so nominate or endorse a given candidate does not limit the ability of other candidates to appear on the ballot and claim a preference for that party, and the ballot does not distinguish between the nominee of a party and other candidates who claim to prefer that party. The two top vote-getters in the primary, regardless of their expression of party preference or independent status, advance to the general election ballot, which similarly identifies the two candidates by their self-described party preference or independent status. In advancing the top two vote-getters to the general election, Initiative 872 essentially forces a runoff election, even if one of the top two won a majority outright in the primary. Initiative 872 replaced Washington State's election system that had been held unconstitutional by the Ninth Circuit in 2003 in Democratic Party of Washington v. Reed, 343 F. 3rd, 1198, on the basis of the Supreme Court's decision in 2000 in California Democratic Party v. Jones. In Jones, the Supreme Court considered a First Amendment right of association challenge to California's blanket primary system, in which all candidates, regardless of party affiliation, appeared on the same ballot to be voted on by all voters. Under that system, which was modeled on the then-existing system in Washington State, the candidate of each party receiving the highest number of votes among that party's candidates advanced to the general election ballot. In an opinion written by Justice Scalia, with dissents from Justices Stevens and Ginsburg, the court in Jones held that California's system violated the First Amendment rights of political parties by allowing non-members to participate in the process of nominating a party standard bearer. In so holding, however, the court in Jones indicated in dicta that a nonpartisan blanket primary might serve the state interest that California was trying to promote, but do so in a constitutional fashion. Under such a system hypothesized by the court, all candidates would appear on the primary ballot, including the party nominees, and the top two vote-getters would advance to the general election. This hypothetical system would pass muster, the court explained, because primary voters would not be choosing a party's nominee. Thereafter, based on Jones, the Ninth Circuit held in 2003 that Washington's system, upon which the California system had been modeled, violated the First Amendment. That in turn resulted in Ballot Initiative 872, which was designed to reestablish the system stricken by the Ninth Circuit without the constitutional defect identified in Jones. In 2005, the Washington State Republican Party brought suit against county election officials seeking declaratory and injunctive relief against enforcement of Initiative 872. The Washington State Democratic Party and the Libertarian Party of Washington moved to intervene as plaintiffs, and the state of Washington moved to intervene as a defendant in place of the county officials. The Washington State Grange, an agrarian public interest organization that was the ballot sponsor of Initiative 872, also intervened to defend the law. In a decision reported at 377 F. Sub. 2nd 907, the United States District Court for the Western District of Washington granted the political party's motion for summary judgment and held that Initiative 872 violated the First Amendment right of association of the political parties for two reasons. First, the district court concluded that Initiative 872 was functionally indistinct from the system struck down in Jones because the Washington system allowed non-members to participate in the nomination of party nominees that would appear on the general election ballot. Second, Initiative 872 allowed candidates to associate with the party against the party's will by claiming a preference for the party. Because Initiative 872 severely burdened the rights of association of the parties and was not narrowly tailored to serve any compelling state interest, the district court declared Initiative 872 unconstitutional as a violation of the First Amendment and enjoined its enforcement. Washington State appealed to the Ninth Circuit. In a panel decision written by Judge Fisher and joined by Judges Nelson and Reimer, the Ninth Circuit rejected the first ground of the district court decision, that is, that the Washington primary was unconstitutional for the same reasons the Supreme Court struck down the California system in Jones. The Ninth Circuit panel reasoned that unlike the system at issue in Jones, Initiative 872 did not establish a nominating primary because party candidates were not guaranteed a place on the general election ballot. The Ninth Circuit panel did, however, affirm the second basis identified by the district court for declaring Initiative 872 unconstitutional. That is, Initiative 872 severely burdened the right of association of political parties by allowing candidates not endorsed or nominated by the party to associate with the party. That had the effect of diluting a political party's brand by allowing an outsider to hijack the political party's label. The Ninth Circuit noted that the state had not articulated any compelling state interest for imposing such a burden, and that to the extent any such interest existed, such interest could be served by a more narrowly tailored system that did not include any party preference or designation on the ballot. Washington State and the Washington Grange petitioned for certiorari on the question presented of whether Initiative 872 violated the political party's right of association by allowing candidates not nominated or endorsed by the parties to identify their political party preference on the ballot. The court granted certiorari. In its opening brief, Washington State argued that Initiative 872 did not impose a severe burden on the political party's right of association. Washington State argued that the statement of party preference is not a representation that the candidate is a nominee or member of that party, and that voters were unlikely to be confused that a statement of party preference meant that the candidate was either the party's nominee or a member of that party. The state further argued that to the extent Initiative 872 imposed any burden on the parties, the modest burden was justified by the state's interest in providing information to the voters about candidates for public office. For its part, the Washington State Grange argued that the Ninth Circuit turned the First Amendment on its head because candidates, in the view of the Washington State Grange, have a First Amendment right to express party preference on the ballot. In their merits briefs, all three political parties, as respondents, argued for affirmance of the Ninth Circuit holding that Initiative 872 severely burdens the First Amendment right of association of political parties by allowing non-member candidates to express a preference for the party. Specifically, to allow candidates outside the party to express a preference for the party dilutes the brand name and message of the party and diminishes the ability of a party nominee to advance to the general election ballot by diluting the vote among the party nominee and those other candidates that have expressed a preference for the party. In addition, the Democratic and Republican parties argue that Initiative 872 severely burdened them by allowing non-members to participate in the decision as to which of their party candidates would advance to the general election ballot. The Libertarian Party pressed this argument even further and argued that the two-step election process with a forced runoff violated the Libertarian Party's ballot access rights by making it unduly difficult for it, as a minor party, to appear on the final general election ballot. The most noteworthy argument in the reply briefs of the petitioners was the arguments raised by the Washington State Grange for the first time that the political party's facial challenge should fail because the ballot could be configured in a way to address the party's concern over the forced association with non-member candidates that express a preference for that party. Specifically, the Grange suggested that the ballot might include a disclaimer that the candidate expressing the preference was not the nominee or even a member of that party. At argument, Washington's Attorney General Robert McKenna began by arguing that the Ninth Circuit's first error was assuming that the ballots would look the same as a primary ballot. That is, that the ballot would identify candidates as members of the party that they had expressed a preference for. This argument by General McKenna was not raised in the state's brief, and it was flatly incorrect. because the Ninth Circuit panel stated that for purposes of the appeal, it assumed that the ballot would read exactly as provided for by Ballot Initiative 872, that is, that the candidate prefers a particular party. See 460F3rd at page 1121, note 20. In any event, that led to a series of questions about what the form of the ballot would look like, and General McKenna answered that the ballot would likely look like sample ballots reprinted in the Grange reply brief, which indicated that a candidate expressed a preference for a party. General McKenna further stated that the ballot might even contain a disclaimer that the expression of a preference did not mean that a candidate was the nominee or even a member of that party, which prompted Justice Scalia to ask whether the ballot would indicate that a party claims or disavows a candidate. General McKenna acknowledged that any ballot disclaimer would not include information that a party disavowed a particular candidate. Chief Justice Roberts asked General McKenna whether he would concede that a political party's associational right would be violated if a candidate outside of that party, but claiming a preference for the party, was identified on the ballot as a member of the party. General McKenna conceded that that situation would violate the party's First Amendment right of association, but then repeated his erroneous argument that the Ninth Circuit had assumed that the ballot would be so configured. As I noted above in this discussion, the Ninth Circuit panel stated that it assumed that the ballot configuration would reflect the wording of Initiative 872, that the candidate preferred a particular party, as opposed to stating that the candidate was a member of the party, as would be done in a traditional primary ballot. Justice Ginsburg threw a lifeline to General McKenna and asked him to explain how a statement of preference would not cause voters to equate that with the party's endorsement or nomination. General McKenna responded that the ballot's disclaimer, that a statement of preference is not the party's endorsement, when coupled with external sources of information, would provide the information necessary to voters to avoid the confusion. Justice Scalia then came back to his point that the parties need to be able to disassociate themselves from the candidate, and Initiative 872 does not do that. General McKenna responded to Justice Scalia that the expression of preference on the ballot was not an association in the constitutional sense. That prompted Justice Souter to ask whether this distinction was meaningful in the real world, because in the real world, an expression of preference for a political party is usually understood to mean that the speaker is a member of that party. General McKenna closed his argument by stating that Initiative 872 vindicated the rights of the parties and the voters. The political parties could select their standard bearers who appeared on the primary ballot, but the choices available to the voters were not limited to the persons nominated by the parties. Finally, the logical implication of the party's argument, according to General McKenna, was that the First Amendment requires a state to place a candidate of their choosing on the ballot. That prompted the Chief Justice to compare this case to a trademark case, and that the injury to the parties in this case is the voters' confusion by multiple candidates claiming preferences for the same party. General McKenna's response was that the Ninth Circuit and respondents simply had assumed there would be such injury, but there was no evidence demonstrating such injury in this case. John White, counsel to the Republican Party, then rose to argue for the political parties. In a series of questions from Justices Souter and Ginsburg, Mr. White quickly cut to the heart of the issue by acknowledging that the parties had no right to place any candidate on the ballot denominated as the party nominee, and that the political parties would not have a First Amendment claim if everything was the same, except that no party preference was shown on the ballot. That prompted a hypothetical from Justice Stevens, who asked whether the law would be constitutional if a person expressing a party preference was required to have been a registered member of that party for the prior year. Mr. White said that that would not solve the constitutional problem identified in Jones, because the blanket primary would be selecting which party candidate advanced to the general election ballot. This was a good answer, but it only applied to the party's first argument, that is, that the primary was a nominating device and therefore in violation of Jones by allowing non-party members to participate in the nominating process. In my opinion, Mr. White should have also said that Justice Stevens' hypothetical would still cause the associational injury that was the party's second argument and the one embraced by the Ninth Circuit, because even if the candidate in question was a real Republican, there would be confusion among the voters as to who the real Republican candidate was. In any event, that prompted a question by Justice Kennedy as to whether the political parties were in fact claiming a right to have a nominated candidate appear on the ballot. Mr. White responded that no, the parties were not claiming such a right, but that the parties were claiming the right to nominate a candidate and then to thereafter restrict the use of the party name on the ballot to that candidate if the state was going to use a partisan identification on the ballot. Justice Kennedy then asked if the parties would have a constitutional claim if the evidence showed that 80% of Washington voters were not confused between the party's nominee and other candidates claiming a preference with the party. Mr. White responded that there was still injury because non-party members were participating in resolving which party candidate would advance to the general election ballot. Mr. White perhaps should have also responded that if 20% of the voters were confused, that would still be injury, because as the court is well aware from painful past experience, elections are often decided by less than 1% of the vote. Justice Stevens asked whether Initiative 872 might be saved by simply invalidating the candidate's expression of party preference, to which Mr. White responded that under Washington severability principles, the answer was no. Justice Stevens also expressed considerable doubt that voter confusion would result from Initiative 872's identification of party preference. General McKenna then rose for his rebuttal. In response to questions from Justice Alito and Chief Justice Roberts, General McKenna clarified his response from his opening argument about whether a ballot that indicated party preference by designating a candidate as a Republican or Democrat would be unconstitutional. General McKenna repeated, for the third time in his argument, his erroneous assertion that the Ninth Circuit had assumed that that is how the ballot would be configured in practice under Initiative 872. In any event, General McKenna clarified his response and said that whether such a ballot configuration would be unconstitutional would depend upon the evidence that such a configuration actually misled or confused voters. Justice Kennedy finally asked if there were any legitimate state interest in weakening the influence of the political parties, and General McKenna said that there was no such legitimate state interest. Justice Kennedy then asked if that was a necessary effect of Initiative 872, would the state then lose? General McKenna answered that the state would lose only if the weakening of the party was a severe burden. My prediction. I'm going to go out on a limb and predict a 7-2 win for the political parties, with Justices Stevens and Ginsburg dissenting. I believe the court will and indeed should affirm the Ninth Circuit on the same ground that the Ninth Circuit ruled for the political parties, that Initiative 872 severely burdens the right of association of the parties by allowing candidates to associate with the party by claiming a preference for that party. That injures the political parties in two ways. First, it saddles them with candidates that the party may wish to have nothing to do with, as in the case of David Duke running as a Republican on the Louisiana open primary ballot in 1991. Second, it dilutes the party brand name by spreading it among several contenders on the ballot, when only two persons on the ballot may advance to the general election runoff. A party's nominee will necessarily have less chance of advancing if other candidates that express a preference for the same party drain votes away from the party nominee. As Chief Justice Roberts remarked at argument, a trademark confusion analysis applies here. In essence, the First Amendment provides political parties the right to control their brand by denying to others the right to use the party label on a state primary ballot. I do not believe the court will adopt the political party's other argument, the one rejected by the Ninth Circuit, that Initiative 872 must fail because it is indistinguishable from the primary system struck down in Jones. This case is not controlled by Jones because Initiative 872 does not establish a nominating primary. Initiative 872 establishes a two-part general election, the second part being a forced runoff between the top two vote-getters. The constitutional flaw in Initiative 872 is not that non-party members are able to select the party nominee that advances to the general election ballot as a matter of right, because under Initiative 872, no candidate advances to the general election as a matter of right. The constitutional flaw, instead, is that Initiative 872 imposes a severe burden on the political parties by allowing candidates outside of a party to appropriate and use that party's good name on the ballot to the party's political detriment. For that reason, I believe that the Ninth Circuit's decision should be and will be affirmed by the Supreme Court.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.